Let us call the second general session of the CCB Spring Convention to order. I want to welcome everybody to the Friday evening session. And as I said, we are already behind schedule because another item has been put on the agenda. So let us move immediately to the report of the Credentials Committee. And to handle that, our able chairperson, Frank Welty. Frank?
Good evening, fellow CCB members. Here is the report of the Credentials Committee. For those of you that are new here, the Credentials Committee plays an important role in CCB. You see, we realize that not every member of CCB can be here to vote at conventions. So in order that members who are not here can be represented, each chapter and special interest affiliate gets a certain number of votes to represent their members. In the case of local chapters, for every 5 members, the chapter gets to cast 1 vote. And for each special interest affiliate, the chapter gets 5 votes regardless of the amount of members they have. And every chapter gets at least 5 votes. So, the Credentials Committee receives credentials forms from each chapter that lists the number of members that they have, and these are home chapter members, that is, members who claim this is their primary chapter, and also the names of the delegate, alternate delegate, and the representative to the CCB nominating committee. And then at the beginning of our convention at 8 o'clock on Friday morning, the Credentials Committee reports out the information they have received, and members are required, that is, the representatives from each chapter are required to attend that meeting and verify the information. So based on those reports and that meeting this morning, I have prepared the following credentials report. I will read the chapters in alphabetical order. ACB Capital Chapter, President Paul Patch, home chapter members, 54, votes, 11, delegate, Paul Patch, alternate delegate, Brian Connors, nominating committee representative, Leslie Tom. Pardon me while I slide this microphone just a little bit. Active Blind Inland Valleys chapter, President Nellie Emerson, home chapter members, 19, votes, 5, delegate, Melody Banks, alternate delegate, Linda Castle, nominating committee representative, Melody Banks. Alameda County Chapter, President Rose Harder, home chapter members, 17, votes, 5, delegate, Katrina McCurdy, no alternate delegate, nominating committee representative, Katrina McCurdy. Bayview Chapter, President Steve Fort, members 59, votes 12, delegate Steve Fort, alternate delegate Kathy Skivers, nominating committee representative Steve Fort. Blind Students of California, President Haley Eddick, home chapter members 12, votes 5, delegate Haley Eddick, no alternate delegate, nominating committee representative Haley Eddick. Braille Revival League of California, President Marlene O'Neill, who's here, home chapter members. Technically, that's not applicable for special interest affiliates, but they do have 47 members, by the way, and 5 votes. Delegate Marlene O'Neill, alternate delegate Roger Peterson, nominating committee representative Marlene O'Neill. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, President Bernice Kandarian, members 74, votes 5, delegate Donna Sanchez, alternate delegate Bernice Kandarian, nominating committee representative Donna Sanchez. California Library Users of America, President Jerry Arakawa, members 26, votes 5, delegate Jerry Arakawa, alternate delegate Leslie Tom, nominating committee representative Jerry Arakawa. Central Coast Vision Loss Council. President, Michelle Mason. Members, 18. Votes, 5. Delegate, Thomas Athanasian. Alternate delegate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, Thomas Athanasian. Compton Council of the Blind. President, Michael Williams. Members, 54. Votes, 11. Delegate, Michael Williams. Alternate delegate, Linda Hardwick. Nominating Committee Representative, Michael Williams. East Los Angeles Chapter. President, Louis Herrera. Members, 25. Votes, 5. Delegate, Louis Herrera. Alternate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, Louis Herrera. El Dorado Chapter. President, Terry Holbrook. Members, 17. Votes, 5. Delegate, Terry Holbrook. Alternate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, Terry Holbrook. Glendale Burbank Chapter. President, Rob Turner. Members, 28. Votes, 6. Delegate, Keith Johnson. Alternate delegate, Rob Turner. Nominating Committee Representative, Rob Turner. Golden Gate Chapter. President, Martin Jones. Members, 21. Votes, 5. Delegate, Martin Jones. Alternate delegate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, Martin Jones. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind. President, John Ross. Home Chapter members, 20. Votes, 5. Delegate, Brandy Morgan. Alternate delegate, Claude McGill. Nominating Committee Representative, John Ross. Greater Long Beach Chapter. President, Robert Wendt. Members, 33. Votes, 7. Delegate, Robert Wendt. Alternate delegate, Pam Metz. Nominating Committee Representative, Robert Wendt. Greater Los Angeles Chapter. President, Pam Metz. Members, 21. Votes, 5. Delegate, Penny Frazier. Alternate delegate, Ken Metz. Nominating Committee Representative, Ken Metz. Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter. President, Mary Beth Randall. Members, 21. Votes, 5. Delegate, Mary Beth Randall. Alternate delegate.
Hold on, Dave. They're not ready yet.
Is there a problem?
No. Go ahead.
No, we're fine.
Olivia Presley. Nominating Committee Representative, Olivia Presley. Gog Dog Users of California. President, Ann Kaiser. Members, 48. Dogs not included. Votes, 5. Delegate, Shirley Manning. Alternate delegate, Ann Kaiser. Nominating Committee Representative, Ann Kaiser. High Desert Chapter. President, Braden Hogarty. Members, 34. Votes, 7. Delegate, Braden Hogarty. Alternate delegate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, Braden Hogarty. Humboldt Council of the Blind. President, James Forbes. Members, 12. Votes, 5. Delegate, Jill O'Connell. Alternate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, Jill O'Connell. Inland Empire Chapter. President, Foster Brown. Members, 34. Votes, 7. Delegate, Bessie Dunn. Alternate delegate, Foster Brown. Nominating Committee Representative, Jane Williams. Orange County Chapter. President, Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker. Members, 25. Votes, 5. Delegate, Bonnie Rennie. Alternate delegate, Bob Rennie. Nominating Committee Representative, Bonnie Rennie. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni Association. President, David Jackson. Members, 23. Votes, 5. Delegate, David Jackson. Alternate, none. Nominating Committee Representative, David Jackson. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California. President, David Hanlon. Members, not applicable. Votes, 5. Delegate, David Hanlon. Alternate delegate, Roy Harmon. Nominating Committee Representative, David Hanlon. Redwood Empire Chapter. President, Beryl Brown. Members, 55. Votes, 11. Delegate, Bill Gillespie. Alternate, Jane Cardis. Nominating Committee, Barbara Cron.
Yeah, he is.
San Bernardino Chapter. President, Alan Ramos. Members, 30. Votes, 6. Delegates, Alva Jean Brannan. Alternate delegates, Alan Ramos. Nominating Committee Representative Alva Jean Brennan. San Diego Braille Club, President Jacqueline Jackson, members 18, votes 5. Delegate Jacqueline Jackson, alternate delegate Monique McCorley, nominating committee representative Jacqueline Jackson. San Diego Silvergate Chapter, President Lee Morton, members 34, votes 7. Delegate Jerry Wilson, alternate delegate Larry Freeman, nominating committee representative Jerry Wilson. San Francisco Chapter, President Linda Perel, home chapter members 31, votes 6. Delegate Linda Perel, alternate delegate Vita Zavalli, nominating committee representative Vita Zavalli. San Gabriel Valley Chapter, President Vince Calderon, members 49, votes 10. Delegate Pam Pology, alternate delegate Vincent Calderon, nominating committee representative Vincent Calderon. San Mateo County Chapter, President Jeannie Ackerman, votes members 75, votes 15. Delegate Jeannie Ackerman, alternate delegate Frank Welty, nominating committee representative Jeannie Ackerman. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, President Lupe Madrano, members 73, votes 15. Delegate Barbara Rhodes, no alternate delegate, nominating committee representative Barbara Rhodes. Solano Adult Braille Club, Acting President Roseanne McLaughlin, members 12, votes 5. Delegate Roseanne McLaughlin, alternate delegate Diane Phelps, nominating committee representative Diane Phelps. And finally, the following chapters will not be credentialed at this convention. Antelope Valley Chapter, Association for Multicultural Concerns, Butte County Chapter, California School for the Blind Alumni, and Pyramid Chapter. Mr. Chair, that concludes the nominating committee report. The credentials committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Welty. We have a motion to accept the report as read. I believe I heard a second, and is that Elmer? Can we get Elmer Chapson to a microphone, please? And I think we're being recorded, so we better. Shh. I don't hear beats.
Oh, my question is, sir, is why isn't the CC, the California School for the Blind Alumni, not being credentialed?
Okay, Frank, you want to
respond? As the gentleman well knows, the Credentials Committee meeting held at 8 o'clock this morning is a mandatory meeting which requires representation by each chapter, and no representative from that chapter was present at that meeting.
No.
Well, we sent in the money and we sent in the list of members. Thank you.
All right. Let's see if we can work things out. Kathy.
How can we make we have a motion on the board accept this credentials report, but we withdraw that?
Yeah. Well, it can. That was what Jeff and I were just discussing, Kathy. The motion could be amended. It is, and let me clarify, Frank. It has been policy for some time that all chapters wishing to be seated have a representative at that morning meeting. However, it is not part of the Constitution or bylaws. So technically, yes. If a chapter does have its credentials and if that is verified, then a motion could be made for them to be seated, to be voted on by the membership. Will the maker, who was somewhere in the back, Would the maker of the original motion accept that?
Yes.
All right, and the seconder.
Mr. President.
Mr. Tom wants to...
I have a question before we finalize this. Butte County, are you out there?
Yeah.
Do you want to challenge or do you want to try and amend it too, or do you... can you get to a mic? Joanne, I couldn't.
You got lost.
Well, let's ask Mr. Welty. Mr. Welty, do we have credentials and dues from the Butte County Council?
I do have that information for both these chapters. I can read them at this time and add them to the report.
All right. Well, why don't you read Butte County? We'll need an additional amendment then to the original motion.
Yes, that would be correct.
All right, so we have a motion to further amend. I'm not sure that goes with Robert's rules, but
I think it's
all right. Frank, why don't you read the credentials information for both CSB and Butte County?
Yes. Butte County Council of the Blind, President Al Beigler, members 12, votes 5, Delegate Al Beigler, Alternate Delegate Joanne Beigler, Nominating Committee Representative Al Beigler. California School for the Blind Alumni Association, President Elmer Chapson, votes 5, Delegate Elmer Chapson, Alternate Delegate Al Gill, Nominating Committee Representative Elmer Chapson.
All right, so the motion now on the floor is to accept the credentials report with the additions of the Butte County Council and California School for the Blind Alumni Association. Any further discussion on the motion?
I don't have that.
It doesn't matter, Bernice, because they're a special interest affiliate. I'm sorry? Well,
I believe it was, if my memory serves, I believe it was something like 25 or something like that.
Okay.
So they're fine.
I mean, technically you're correct, Bernice, but no one was challenging them on those grounds. Did I hear a gentleman again toward the back?
Question.
Yes. You're calling for the question or you have a question?
Call for the question.
All right. Well, hearing no other... Hearing no... Yes. He called it something. Hearing no other calls for the floor, all those in favor of the motion to accept the credentials report as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Mr. Welty, thank you very much.
One comment before I yield, and this is always something we need to remind everybody every year, is that be reminded that exactly 15 minutes after this meeting ends this evening, in the Sonoma Room, the nominating committee meeting will begin. That is an executive session, which means that once the meeting starts, doors are closed. In other words, if your nominating committee representative is late, they're not in. So if you are the nominating committee representative, or if you know where to catch the nominating committee representative in the next hour or so, make sure they know they have to be there on time.
Okay. Do we have, I thought that we had a couple of announcements. Melody Banks. Mr. Peterson.
I just had a slight point for the credentials chair, and that is that at Bernice's encouragement, I have been looking through the Constitution, and I find that it says in Section 1111 that it's the spring convention that is a 45 days before, and it's the fall convention that is 30 days. At the president's dinner, the chair said it the other way around. I also found, by the way, that in Article 8 about chapters, it says that the credentials only have to be, this was the dues and stuff, the credentials only have to be 30 days before each convention, according to the current Constitution. So there's a slight discrepancy there. Thank you.
Sounds like Roger, as chair of Constitutional Bylaws, we have a little work for you. All right. Melody? Are you on a microphone?
Yeah, I'm getting there. Take it off. Oh, okay. It's kind of tall. Okay. Good evening, everybody. I'd like to make an announcement and invite everybody to Riverside for the week of May 14th through 19th. Blindness Support Services is celebrating Blindness Awareness Week, and we have a week of events that's going to be happening that Tuesday, which is the 15th. They're going to have audio-described movies at Blindness Support Services. Then on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, they're going to open up the Independent Living Center for anybody who wants to come and find out what kind of services that they're providing. We are also having people from the local government, assemblymen, or not assemblymen, city councilmen, business people, people in the community coming to the facility also, and it'll be a unique experience for the non-visually disabled community, because once they walk in the door, they're blindfolded for the rest of the day. So they are going to get a true feeling of what it is like for our community. But the kickoff, or the big finale, is going to be on Saturday between the hours of 10 and 3. We are hosting a blindsided miniature golf tournament. Each hole is being sponsored by a community leader or a business. You will be paired with a sighted and a non-sighted golfer. The sighted golfers, again, will be totally blindfolded. So the businessmen are going to, or the business representatives are going to be golfing like we do. There'll be prizes awarded at the end. We're also having a raffle. The prize for the raffle is a 3-day cruise, amongst other things, and the tickets are $2 a piece. Don't ask me, I don't have them with me. but we're also offering anybody who just wants to come and participate and be there, we're offering for $12, you'll get unlimited golf and rides at the Castle Park Amusement. So anybody who's interested, please contact Blindness Support Services or see me, and I'll give you the direct numbers of where you can contact people. Okay? Oh, and also, CCB, any of your chapters who have fundraisers, we're also having vendors' tables. And if you would like to come and sell whatever your fundraiser is, it's free. You just have to call and let us know so we can have a table set up for you. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Melody. The next item is communications and electronic and information technology accessibility update. Scott Windley is team leader from the U.S. Access Board Rights of Way staff, and he's going to facilitate a presentation and a Q&A session by the board's 508-255 accessibility specialist, David Backwis. And David, I know, is already on Scott's phone. I don't know if the connection to the speaker has been made, but I have two brief bios of these two gentlemen for us to know who they are. And a lot of us heard Scott's presentation this morning at the CAT committee. It was very, very good. And as I said to Scott, this is my day off from work, my every other Friday off, but I can now take 3 hours of comp time for sitting in on that session. Scott Windley joined the U.S. Access Board in March of 1997. He previously worked for 2 years with the Center for Universal Design, previously Center for Accessible Housing, as a technical assistance specialist, providing technical assistance on accessible universal housing and the Fair Employment, Fair Housing Amendments Act, supervising students with the Home Modification Clinic. Mr. Windley received a Bachelor of Architecture from the University of Idaho. Roger, you have a friend here. And subsequently served as an architecture and planning intern with the university's facilities planning and design departments for 2.5 years. He has given many presentations to students, advocates, and professionals on accessibility issues. Currently, at the board, Mr. Windley oversees staff work on the board's public rights-of-way rulemaking, provides technical assistance and training on the ADAG and other standards, and manages AutoCAD production. When you get to AutoCAD production, you've lost me. Oh, good. I'm very happy to hear that. David Bakwis has worked as an accessibility specialist with the U.S. Access Board for the past 6 years. He delivers presentations on accessible electronic and information technology, writes technical assistance materials, and responds to public inquiries on Sections 508 and 255. His background blends experience in consumer education, disability issues, technology, and public policy. So I will now turn the program over to Scott Windley and David Bakwis. Let's give them a hand.
Okay, David is with us by phone. Hope David can hear us. David, can you still hear us?
Check, check, 1, 2. This is me.
All right. I'm going to let him do most of the speaking. I am going to try to facilitate the questions. So bear with me if I have to repeat a question to him, if he can't hear it, if I don't get it exactly right. But we'll try to work it out. So I turn the time over to David.
Thank you, Scott. And thank you, everyone, for inviting me to speak to your conference. I should tell you that I've been eavesdropping on your meeting for a little while, and it feels like a combination of an administrative meeting and a happy hour. I feel like I'm sitting right there. And don't worry if we're running over a little bit, because my local train system doesn't close until 3 a.m, so we have plenty of time. Now, I usually deliver a PowerPoint show that takes much longer than the time allotted. We have about 30 minutes in this segment. And so I'm going to cut to the chase and talk with you about some current activities and then leave some time for questions and answers. I should tell you, by the way, that I have low vision. And I've actually been a member of your organization. I was the vice president of the D.C. chapter, the National Capital Citizens with Low Vision, for a while. Now, I speak about Section 508 and 255, and I never assume that everybody in the audience has the same knowledge level. So I'll just tell you briefly that Section 508 is part of a law called the Rehabilitation Act, and it requires that information technology that the federal government purchases and develops be accessible. That is, the products conform to the specific accessibility requirements for technology that the Access Board issued. Similarly, the Access Board issued guidelines under Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act. Those are specific to telecommunications products. And in both cases, the requirements address the needs of people with vision, hearing, speech, and dexterity disabilities, so they're quite broad. Now, the Section 508 standards were issued about 6 years ago in December of 2000. And the law, the Rehabilitation Act, authorizes the Access Board to review and amend those standards as required, and we're in the midst of doing that right now. It's quite exciting. We estimate that the entire process from beginning to end would take at least 2 years, and we're kind of in the midst of it now. In the first stage, we convened an advisory committee, and you all may know that your organization, ACB, is actually a member of that advisory committee. And I heard the name Melanie in the room. I don't know if you're actually, if it's the same Melanie, nope. But you do have a representative at ACB you can turn to for questions and more specifically to represent your interests if you have some suggestions. Now, in addition to your blindness organization, the other two blindness organizations, AFB and NFB, are also members of the committee, just for your information. And since I know that you're thinking of things specifically from the California perspective, you should know that there's two state-specific members of the committee, one representing state chief information officers and another representing state technology assistance programs. And so this is important for you to know because these are all members that you can turn to for your suggestions on how to improve the standards to meet your needs in terms of accessibility of information technology. There's a lot of ways you can participate directly as well. There are subcommittee conference calls that you could dial in on and listen or speak. There are listservs you could subscribe to. Then we have a six-letter acronym for this committee. We call it TEITAC. It's T-E-I-T-A-C, those three letters, T-E-I-T-A-C. And if you put that into the URL, or you can just Google it or whatever, you'll get to the website specific to the advisory committee that'll give you further information on everything I just said. The representatives, the conference calls, the listservs. If you were in town, you could even comment publicly at our meetings where we all come together. And when we eventually put out a notice of proposed rulemaking based on the advice of the committee as well as some Access Board members, you'll have a chance to comment in writing as well. So there's a lot of opportunities in this very open and inclusive rulemaking process to participate. Now, I thought I'd get specific with some of the issues that the committee is talking about. This might make the subject a little bit more interesting for you. One is, I don't know if you all have ever tried to read these standards or guidelines, but you can ask yourself, did you find them understandable? At first glance, was it kind of overwhelming? Was it just a sea of words using a lot of jargon you didn't understand? If you feel like it should be easier to understand, that's something you can talk about. If you're really into the subject, you might even recommend some specific wording in some areas. So that was one issue, just the usability of the document. Here's an issue of great importance to people who are blind. And by the way, I'm never sure what word to use. One time somebody said, would you stop calling me blind? I'm visually impaired, okay? And then somebody else told me, stop calling me visually impaired. I'm blind, okay? So I can't win. But anyway, here's the important issue. And you can sum it up in two words, electronic content. That includes information such as stuff that's posted on a website, the HTML information. But the question is, what kind of content is covered by 508 or should be covered? There's some areas that are unsettled. We don't say yes or no. We just say it's unsettled. We're waiting for the advisory committee to give us recommendations on whether documents posted on and off of the Internet should also be covered by standards, by the 508 standards. How about email? Should that be covered? It's not explicitly clear right now. And what if it's off the web, not just on the web, but what if it's on a CD or on one of those little flash drives? What if it's on a server? This is what I consider perhaps the most important issue for this advisory committee to discuss and for you all to comment on, and you can help influence this process now. This is your window of opportunity to make a difference. It's very controversial. I think most people would agree that PDF documents, for example, are covered, but what if a Word document is put up on the web? There's a lot of issues related to this that need to be settled and will be by the time we finish the rulemaking process. Another issue that comes up is what kind of products are covered under 508? Most people are clear that something like software or a telephone is covered. But we get these really unusual questions like, is my liquid chromatograph or gas spectrometer or real-time polymerase chain reaction system, all this scientific and medical equipment. It's important to you because We think the federal government should be welcoming to scientists with disabilities, including those who have visual disabilities. Just like the electronic content issue was so important, because if somebody, you know, gets very accessible assistive technology like a great screen reader or refreshable braille display, but then is given documents they can't read, and to add insult to injury, they're told that the documents aren't even addressed by the standards, or that the agency hasn't done anything wrong, then it feels like there's a gap that needs to be addressed. What about the issue of how something like software or a website might work with one brand of assistive technology but not another brand? And then the employee or member of the public is told the agency is fully in compliance because it worked with the one assistive technology, even though it doesn't work with the other. How should that be handled? That's something else that the committee is talking about. Let's talk about telephones. You have a right to a telephone that can provide to you all the information on that visual display that I could see. And it's not just caller ID. And we're talking about both cellular phones, the wireless phones, as well as desktop phones, battery power, whether you're roaming, the time and date, the call duration, how many messages you have waiting. There's actually over 200 of these kinds of functions that have been identified. And the idea is universal design. Everybody should have a right to access those functions and use them. To put it in a nutshell, we consider these standards and guidelines a civil right. Section 508 is a civil right. And we're asking ourselves, what is it that we need to require from these products in order to assure that they're not violating your civil rights? And I'll give you one other example, because I think getting specific like this can help stir you up and really make this interesting. Let's talk about the product support documentation. That might be, let's say, a manual that comes with, a copy machine or software. They used to give them out with software that would provide information on how to use the product. Well, most people understand that they need to get that in alternative formats, but let's think about that. Let's say that your manual says something like, turn knob C in the direction of the arrow. And so the manufacturer takes those words and makes them, transforms them in a form that you can read, braille or large print, or maybe it's available electronically so you can access it with your technology. But here's the point. That's not good enough, is it? Okay, so now independently, you can read that sentence, turn knob C in the direction of the arrow. Well, you still don't know what to do. And so that's not addressed in the standards. One manufacturer rewrote their whole manual to make it more descriptive with explanations, so somebody who's blind wouldn't be lost. But it's not required in the standards, and that's something you can say you want. Now, let's shift gears for a second, because there's other elements of my job that might interest you. The most important hat I wear, actually, is in the subject of developing accessibility guidelines for voting systems in this country. And so I'm going to turn this around, and I'm going to speak for just a little bit longer, but I'm going to ask you a question now I want you to think about. One of the states called me up, an agency in another state, and they were asking me, what is it that people who are blind want in terms of voice output on the voting systems? But specifically what she asked me is whether there were any standards or guidelines for the audio ballot in voting systems. And specifically that might be things like, the gender of a voice, or how fast or how loud, or all those little variables that make it more usable for you. That may not be found anywhere, I don't think, in written form. But anyway, if you know of something that she can refer to, or if we have to put it together from scratch, maybe that's something you can help me with in answering that question. The last subject I wanted to talk about, besides the standards and the voting systems issue, was research. The access board spins a number of plates in the air, and one of the things is that we actually have money to fund research. It's, you know, usually through contractors. And some of that research is specific to issues of interest to people who are blind. And some of this Scott would understand more than I would, and he might be able to address it, I don't know, today or some other point on the conference schedule. But they include, and I'll just read you the headings here, accessible pedestrian signals, pedestrian signals at roundabouts, outdoor wayfinding cues, and lighting. I'm especially interested in lighting. You know, when I was trying to get help with my low vision, I specifically asked all kinds of experts about this, and nobody was helpful to me. I got my best information on illumination on this website out of the UK, where the website specifically said illumination is probably one of the most helpful things for somebody with low vision. And then I found in this country that the websites related to craft work, like needlepoint, those had a lot of good information on the full spectrum or natural light or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, that's another area of research. And the final thing I want to mention before we open it up for questions is that there's another federal entity I'm involved with called ICDR. And I know I need to spell out the acronym for you. It's the Interagency Committee on Disability Research. See, if you think about the words, a lot of federal agencies coming together to focus on the issue of research on disability. And what's really exciting about this entity is, you know, often somebody has an idea but no money. And this is exactly the opposite of that. We have money, and we need the idea from you all. What is it that you would like the federal government to spend those research dollars on when it comes specifically to research issues and disability? There was a conference in 1999 specifically on wayfinding, and you know, we do a conference every year, and if you let us know what's of interest to you, maybe we'll do one on accessibility of voting systems one year. Okay, I think that was about it. The other thing I wanted to mention about the research is that I'm also involved in an advisory capacity to various research engineering research centers. Rehabilitation engineering research centers. And one of them is specific to accessible medical instrumentation. So I've had influence in that end too, raising awareness about things like talking glucometers and so on. I use those kinds of things myself, and I understand the importance of continuing to push the envelope on making medical workplaces accessible to employees with disability, as well as welcoming patients and clients with disabilities. So I think I did okay on time. Scott, do you want to help gather some questions for me?
Sure.
We've got about 10 minutes. And
we have one coming forward.
One coming forward. And give your name, please.
Albert Contreras, San Gabriel Valley chapter. And one of the things that I would like to see put with respect to this committee is a lot of us have been really annoyed with that the fact that some of the companies that are working with us on some of our own equipment that has been put together for us to use, the equipment is just not put in the proper media that we can use to access it. Some of it is online, which is fine, but there are some people who would like to possibly see the manuals and things for some of the equipment put on in Braille or on tape in any media or in large print so that people could just access it on their own. So it would be really good. When I first started working with this equipment, telesensory systems, you know, put the VersaBraille and other things, that type of equipment, on a very good documentation. So the documentation should be made accessible to where, you know, blind people can see it, whether it be put online with the equipment you're buying, but also have it in some sort of ready media. So That's kind of what I'd like to say, and if anyone else wants to elaborate on that.
Mr. Bachwitz, did you understand the question?
Hold on, everybody.
David, did you hear that?
Yes, I heard the question perfectly, and I'd like to respond.
Great, go ahead.
I have two thoughts. The first is that in addition to the specific text of design requirements in both the 255 and 508, underneath those requirements, we can list advisory notes, as we call them. These might be examples of how to implement those requirements or illustrations. And in 255, we actually have advisory notes currently that discuss alternative formats. And since we're updating 255 and 508 at the same time now, we hope to put advisory notes in 508 too. And so the point is, that might be a home for your comment, for your suggestion, where they can say, not just in general should you provide alternative formats, but specifically consider being proactive in these ways. And since 508 is focused on federal agency responsibility, one of the things we'll encourage the agencies to do is get an electronic version of that product support documentation, what Doug Wakefield used to call convertible. And once the agency has it convertible, then they can provide it any way you need it. They can give it to you attached to an email. You can get it off a website. They could make it large print for you. The federal government has a bunch of brailing machines. We could braille it out for you. 255 is slightly different because that's a responsibility on the shoulders of the manufacturers, and so they might need a little bit of technical assistance on how they would provide those alternative formats upon request. But yeah, it's fine that you ask for that. They need to know what your needs are.
Thank you. We've got several people in line. Do try to keep your questions to the point. Who's next?
I'm next, Mitch. This is Barbara Rhodes. In San Jose, California. And first of all, what's going to be happening with VISTA and the accessibility? Our technology department, we had a technology meeting, and they did a wonderful job on demonstrating VISTA and how it works with WindowEyes. My concern is that they also showed us Outlook, which they had to write a special program for because Microsoft didn't do anything to make it accessible. What's happening with that, and how is it going to be corrected? And also, the way they changed the ribbon, you have to do an Alt-HFO to get to something, and they've changed everything around so you don't know where anything is. And can we request that if someone saves a document in Word, that it be an earlier version of Word, so us that don't go up to VISTA will be able to read the documents? And then I've got something else about transportation.
Well, let's have to have you move by the back of the queue on that one. We've got at least three other people.
Okay,
David?
I'll go to the back of the queue.
David?
Yes. I'll be brief in my response. I'm very honest and direct. My answer is I don't know, but I know how to find out. I know that there are some questions and concerns. I know that Microsoft's going to be coming into town shortly and doing a presentation specifically for the accessibility federal community to raise our awareness of what they have to offer and to receive our questions. So I encourage you to email that question to me, and Scott can provide the contact information for me later on. And then I can get you the answers to those specific functions on the keyboard and things that aren't working quite right. The good news about Microsoft is they actually grew their accessibility department after the initial troubles, you know, when they went from DOS to Windows many years ago. And I remember how they developed this accessibility team. I was actually chair of the Microsoft Accessibility Advisory Council several years ago. So I know that there's an effort there to perform outreach, to answer your questions, and they have their own website, Microsoft/enable. So I have plenty of things to offer to you on the subject, and we can be more specific later.
Thank you. Who's next?
Hi, my name is Brandy Morgan. I'm with the Bakersfield, California chapter. I don't so much have a question. I have more of a suggestion. You were asking for suggestions for the research. And our thought was that maybe you could research the idea that we have the big battle between the pay for people or for women versus men, but there's also that big discrepancy between the disabled and the not disabled. So that could be something you could look into.
Okay, David, is that in your field of research?
I heard somebody out in the audience say, "What are you talking about?" Could you clarify the question for me, please?
She was commenting that you had indicated that you're interested in research projects, and she was suggesting that you look into the issue of pay disparity between folks with disabilities and folks who do not have disabilities. Is that in your area of expertise to address?
Well, let's see if I missed one of the words. Did you say pay disparity?
Pay disparity.
Like wages.
Ah, okay. I could take this suggestion and direct it to a subcommittee that's specific to employment of people with disabilities. That might be of interest, yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
It would be helpful if you could kind of write that suggestion out more fully and email it to me, and then I can pass it on.
All right, we'll get your email address at the conclusion. Who is next?
I'm Bernice Kandarian. David, I'm the current president of the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, and I'm on the TITAC subcommittee on telecommunications. I have some real concerns in the phone calls that I've been on about not giving consideration, especially to people who are deafblind, for access to devices. And I also wanted to mention about lighting, which is not part of TITAC, but in California, in our state legislature, we have bills that are trying to eliminate incandescent bulbs, and that is a lot of low-vision people have very difficult time utilizing fluorescent bulbs, and there is an exemption of some sort in language in one of the bills, but you know, it's the built environment will make it become less successful as a result of if this legislation passes. Thank you.
Hey, David.
On the issue of deaf blindness, we definitely encourage you to bring that to the attention of the committee, and you could send an email to Tim Cregan, who's the staff member here at the Access Board, who has the responsibility to manage that advisory committee, and they could certainly take that suggestion. I can tell you that the issue, just to give you an analogy, the needs of people with cognitive disabilities were mentioned in 255, but not 508. So that's a precedent. If we fold cognitive into 508, that they can add a disability, that they might be able to work on that issue of scoping and what kind of disabilities these standards help. The issue of lighting I wasn't aware of, and that's probably a hot political potato. Certainly you could bring that issue to a number of entities, people that are doing research, and I don't know, I'd have to think about that more. Go ahead and email me that one too.
We have one more person at the mic, and then I will wrap it up with a quick question. All right, hang on, Barbara. Who is the person at the mic?
My name is Penny Valdivinos, and I'm from the Bakersfield chapter. My question is the POS machines that keep getting changed in the stores.
Yeah.
It makes us less independent and more dependent on people, and I don't like other people doing my ATMs. Thank you.
Okay, David, ATM, point-of-sale machines?
Point-of-sale machines.
Yeah, I understand the question. We're actually very interested in that subject. Of course, Section 508 only applies to technology the federal government buys. One of the federal agencies, of course, is the U.S. Postal Service, and they buy plenty of those. So there is some precedent in that area. The Access Board actually has a draft bulletin on this subject that I expect will come out with at some point in the future also, so you can look forward to that. Go ahead and send me your email address too with that question, and I can make sure you get a copy of it when it becomes final and posted on our website.
David, does 255 address the point of sale machines at all?
Well, 255 covers telecommunications products. When I think of point-of-sale machine, I don't usually think of telecom, but we can't make sweeping generalizations these days because technologies converge. What if some point-of-sale machines happen to have a handset on them? Well, then it's now a telecom device, too. So it's something that we'll have to look at more closely and talk to the industry about.
Yep.
Okay, Barbara, quickly, and then I'm going to wrap it up with a question. So,
I am a member of the Committee for Transit Accessibility for Valley Transportation Agency, and I'm also on the Elderly and Disabled Advisory Committee of the Metropolitan Transportation Committee, just so you know I'm involved in transportation. We're starting to run into a problem of not receiving our packets in accessible media. They are starting to say you got to go to their inaccessible websites or the websites that you have to go 29 levels down to get part of the packet, but not the whole packet. And if they are sending out hard copy documents to everyone else and they receive federal money, is this your area?
And you're talking about packets related to transportation?
Yes, I am.
I'll answer this.
Section 504.
I'm a member of the advisory committee, and we're not getting our material in accessible media. And we've suggested to them that would they please make this accessible? Have each department, when they do the budget, make the budget available, accessible.
Okay,
they
Barbara,
want me to come up with a program.
I think we understand.
Yeah,
Scott's going to respond.
Can I just finish, Mitch, one more thing? I was asked to do research to see if I could find out if there's some program that would make it easier for them to make these changes, and that would be a great research thing. And I shut up.
Okay. Scott, David?
David, I'll take this one. Section 504 of the Rehab Act basically says that any federally funded program has to be accessible to and usable by a person with a disability. So if they're receiving DOT funding, if this is a transit situation, they're probably receiving DOT funding. DOT's 504 regulation would require them to provide your material in alternate formats. They are just merely not complying with what has been required of them since 1973.
Yeah.
So.
They've been doing it, but they're starting to lack personnel.
Well, somebody needs to remind them, and my suggestion to you would be to first kindly remind them, and then if they still give you grief, file a complaint with the Federal Transit Administration.
All right. And my quick question, we're in the process of remodeling our kitchen, and my wife is low vision, I have no vision, and we're having lots of fun finding accessible appliances that aren't digital. David, where do we stand on getting the manufacturers kicked into gear on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a gap. It's not covered by 508 or 255 generally, so we don't have this public policy driving accessibility in those areas, generally speaking. Sometimes those technologies get connected to a phone line and then become a telecom product, like sending an email from your microwave oven. But generally, that's a true example. But generally, we can't use these policies to drive accessibility. So it's an area where there might need to be new legislation at some point. In the meantime, you're back to your basic advocacy tools to try to influence the manufacturers. I was interested, I don't know if I should say this, but another blindness organization, AFB, actually has a lot of research on accessibility of appliances on their website. So that might be one source of information.
We've been very lucky. Our architect is a dear friend, and blind people don't freak him out. And he's actually working with us to find accessible appliances, but we're very lucky in that way. I want to thank David Bockwist, Scott Windley. Scott, why don't you give the contact information, because David asked, I think, at least three questioners to please email more detailed questions, and so that someone at the Access Board, David or Scott or whomever, can get back to them. Give the contact information.
Sure.
Scott, I'll give you the easy way. It's 508@.
Yeah. Yeah, it's similar to what I, in my session, if you remember, those that were in my session, I mentioned that our general technical assistance email is TA, that stands for technical assistance, so TA@access-board.gov. So the 508 version of that would be 508@access-board.gov.
Okay, so TA@access-board.gov or 508@access-board.gov. Again, thank you, David. Back with Scott Windley.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm signing off. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right. The next program item is the future of ACB. What can it be? And the gentleman to give that presentation is in an excellent position to do that. He's concluding his third and final term, as president of the American Council of the Blind. He's our newly elected treasurer of CCB. Let me bring on President Christopher Gray.
Thank you all very much, and good evening. Everybody ready for a long speech out there? Well, don't you know by now that I'm not a long speech maker, and I'll try not to change that too much tonight. In beginning my remarks, I'd like to do something a little bit different than make my presentation about ACB. And that is that I want to take this opportunity, the first time that I have addressed a CCB convention since you gave me the honor of electing me as your treasurer. And I want to thank you for that very much. You did it even though I had a work emergency and couldn't attend the convention in Southern California. And I want to assure you that it is a great honor, and I will do what I can to help this organization grow, improve, and prosper. So thank you for that very much. Now, putting back on my ACB hat. And there really is no hat up here, I have to admit. But anyway, figuratively speaking, putting on my ACB hat, I'm so pleased to be here tonight to address you as President of the American Council of the Blind. I want to bring you the greetings of the Board of Directors of ACB, our National Staff and Executive Director, Melanie Brunson, in Washington, D.C., our great staff in Minneapolis, led by our new controller, Lane Waters. I also want to say how pleased I am, and Jeff mentioned this earlier today, but I am so very pleased that tonight, once again, after a hiatus of some time, we're being broadcast around the nation and around the world on ACB Radio. Thank you, Marlena. And we are being listened to out there. Marlena knows this. She's getting lots of contacts. And we thank everybody out there in ACB Radio land as well for listening. I
will wait.
Somebody has a question about
let's
the radio?
Hold till you're...
It is not on mainstream, but if you go to the main ACB Radio page, you'll find a link to the broadcast. And, of course, I would be utterly remiss if I didn't acknowledge and thank someone who happens to be sitting just to my right tonight, Marvelena Quesada, for her help and support. Marvelina is very happy to be here tonight and this weekend. Please don't call us before 7 a.m. to say hello, but we're both so pleased to be here. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I attended along with approximately half of CCB, no, just kidding, with a number of other CCB people, the 40th anniversary of the Hawaii Association of the Blind. And what a great event it was. I've been honored to attend a couple of anniversaries. Probably the most notable was the 100th anniversary of the Maine Fraternal Association of the Blind. But it was great to be in Hawaii, and it got me to thinking about anniversaries, about age and so forth of organizations. And you know, it was funny being in Hawaii's 40th. It made me realize that ACB is only 46 years old this year. And of course, CCB, we're very venerable here, but with each decade, all of us in organizational groups grow, mature, learn more effectively all the time how to position ourselves, how to better assist our members, friends, and neighbors, how in the case of CCB and ACB to improve the lives of blind and visually impaired Americans. Tonight, I'd like to focus on three major areas of discussion: advocacy, change, and our next 10 years. That's why it's a short speech. I didn't want to go into the next 100 years of ACB, you see. First, let's talk a bit about advocacy. Many of you know, because you've participated so much in it, about ACB's role regarding and our creation in many ways with CCB, the idea of structured negotiation. Two California attorneys, Lanny Feingold, Linda Dardarian, have worked with CCB and ACB for over 10 years in creating this concept. We began it by bringing forward the radical idea that bank ATMs ought to talk. How about that?
Yeah.
That started here in California. Now, I know there are ATMs that don't talk, and I know that we often go to ATMs that are supposed to talk. We put the earphone in, and, well, we just don't hear anything. But we're making huge strides in this area. Do you know that today, at least one major manufacturer of ATM machines in the United States, and they're a worldwide supplier, put speech into every ATM machine Wow. they make? The guiding principle of ACB in this work has been to provide the same information to a blind person that is provided to a person who is not blind. It's really very simple. That's all we're trying to do. Next in this work of structured negotiations, where have we gone? And the answer is to the flat screens, the point-of-sale machines that a lady brought up a little bit earlier tonight. It's a huge problem. It is not right that we have to go into a store and tell somebody our PIN in order to make a purchase. And I hope you know, and if you don't know, I want you to walk away this evening with the knowledge that CCB and ACB have worked very hard in this area. We continue to work in this area. And the ability to physically use point-of-sale machines is only somewhat available today, but it's getting better as time goes on. Thus far, ACB and CCB have negotiated settlements with several users of these machines, people like Safeway, Trader Joe's. There are many more to come. I believe we'll see at least two more major chains this year, maybe even three, recognize they have to meet the needs of blind people. And once again, my friends, the guiding principle of ACB in this work has been to provide the same information to a blind person that is provided to a person who is not blind, and to provide physical access to the machine that must be used, similar to that of a person who is not blind. Another major area of work of ACB and CCB is to promote pedestrian safety. We believe in ACB that traffic signals that provide audio information are not only helpful, but they provide essential information to blind and visually impaired pedestrians. We further believe and fight for the right of the blind to have detectable warnings at the edge of drop-offs such as railroad and light rail trackways. Similarly, we believe that accessibility to voting machines and the right of the blind to cast a private ballot with true accessibility is indeed a right and one worth fighting for. And once again, my friends, the guiding principle of ACB and CCB in this work is to provide the same information to a blind person that is provided to a person who is not blind. It's so simple. And part of my message to you tonight is that we need to go out and understand that message among ourselves, but espouse it to other people. We only want the same information that others can have. And that information is available. It's not difficult. While ACB prefers to work positively with organizations such as banks and retail outlets to effect change, the blind of America are not always given this option. Sometimes we must go to the mat, go to court, to press the rights of the blind. There are two examples of this that are ongoing at this time on the national level and of critical importance. First is ACB's litigation with our friends at the Department of the Treasury. We know that the technology exists today to create accessible currency. Every other country in the world that creates paper currency, some of whom use the same people who make our paper currency, do something about currency accessibility. Marvelyn and I were in Canada last week and were given a couple of lessons in how to read the Braille on Canadian currency. Now, their bills are very similar to ours, and for a long time were almost identical to ours. By golly, if our neighbors in Canada can make their paper money more accessible, we can do it too. And in case you didn't hear me say this before, the guiding principle of ACB in this work has been to provide the same information to a blind person that is provided to a person who is not blind. That's all. As an advocacy organization, the American Council of the Blind and CCB have led the way as leading advocacy organizations. In California, the California Council of the Blind is clearly and has always been a leader in this area, the key leader in this area since your inception in 1934. Never forget that you are the leading organization of the blind in California and represent blind people in your work throughout this country. California has some of the strongest legislation in the country in many, many areas of disability, and CCB has been a part of that. Your leadership through your current president, Jeff Tom, through many others, your immediate past president, Kathy Skivers, and so many others, bubbles up to the national level and helps strengthen our national organization. As has ACB with the Treasury and Social Security departments, CCB has not feared and has not shrunk back from what you know needs to be done. Time and time again, you have stood with ACB in the litigation I mentioned earlier today, tonight, and many others. And I almost forgot to mention the Social Security lawsuit. You know, isn't it funny? We believe in ACB, and I know you agree with us here in California, because there are California people assisting in this case, that it really doesn't make sense for the Social Security Administration to send all us blind folks letters in print. Yeah. ACB began talking with Social Security in the early 1990s, and we finally decided in 2006 we'd talked long enough. Let me go to my second area, and that is the area of change. Change is one of those inevitable things that seems to come faster and faster all the time, and we've got to live with it. Some say we just barely survive with it. I don't know how each of you feels. This summer, I'll experience a major change as I step down from the presidency of ACB. Let me assure you, I'm not slacking on the job, even though I'm nearing its end. Jeff and Mitch were with me at a board meeting recently, and at this meeting, we adopted a new budget, a balanced budget for ACB. We found our way through a 22-item agenda. We spent Saturday having a working lunch. I want to tell you tonight how proud I am of the American Council of the Blind Board of Directors, of their work, and of the role of the board in providing leadership to this organization. President Jeff Tom has sought to create and mentor new leadership in California, and that leadership is going to play a major role in ACB in the future. I want every state president to create this kind of leadership, because trust me, nobody in their right mind wants to be president forever, at least not in a democratic organization. When I leave ACB's presidency, let me assure and promise you that this is only a time of renewed activity on my part to work in behalf of the blind and of ACB. Also in the area of change, CCB is facing significant change in the retirement of Catherine Campisi. Yes. We will support CCB nationally to ensure as best we can that the next director in the state of California is appropriate for the job and will stand with CCB for true rehabilitation of the blind. Hopefully, to help you with that, recently ACB has adopted a major comprehensive white paper on the providing of rehabilitation services. With this paper, the American Council of the Blind has put a stake in the ground about changing dogmatic rehabilitation practices that reward only the most capable blind. We prefer a system that uses mutual participation between agency and client, that maximizes each client's potential, whatever that may be. And it's got to be a system that creates partnerships over dictatorships when it comes to individual rehabilitation and case management. While some of the principles outlined in this white paper may be challenging to many agencies around the country, these principles are offered in a positive spirit and through a desire to improve the lives of blind Californians and blind Americans generally. Now, what about the future? I promised you not a 100-year future, and it's hard to see, even 5 or 6 years later at the end of my presidency, quite how we got where we got today. Things change, laws change, people change, and it's hard to know what will happen in 10 years. However, there are many things that we do know, and I think we can make some extrapolations about that. As I said, I'm looking forward to a new, invigorated role in ACB at the Hawaii Association of the Blind Conference. That organization took the major step of proposing a Western Regional Leadership Forum for the Blind. I talked it over with Jeff and told Jeff I would like to spearhead that work on behalf of California. California is not in a position to put a lot of money into this, but we can certainly put people and talent into it. Where we will meet, I don't know yet. Hawaii pledged an operating beginning budget of $3,000 for the conference, and we'll find the money to make the rest of that conference happen. I hope it will be in the fall of 2007. Sure. With things like this happening as the beginning of our future, ladies and gentlemen, how can we go wrong? Next month marks a special event, and an event in which ACB is playing a key role. For the first time in history, at least in the history that we know about, the entire continent of Africa will sponsor an African Union Conference of the Blind in Nairobi, Kenya. It is our intention and our hope that that entire conference will be streamed on ACB radio for the world to hear.
Wow.
And while we're talking about ACB radio again, we are testing and launching in the very near future. It may launch really with the African conference, the fifth channel ACB radio world in six languages. You guys know I've always liked ACB radio, and I believe that later this year, finally, we have tried so hard and had so many difficulties coming our way. But it would appear, based on a number of conversations and demonstrations held at the CSUN conference in Los Angeles in March of this year, that by the time of the 2007 convention, there will be an ACB radio available and accessible to all blind people. You don't even have to be a computer user. Can you believe that?
All right.
I've said many times that ACB radio needs to be available to every one of our members. I don't care what your technological aptitude is. And it would appear once again, and I think finally for real, we can make that happen. So I'm excited about that. The finances of ACB have improved in the last year. They improved significantly enough that the ACB Board of Directors was able, with the help of our new controller, with Melanie Brunson, and a lot of work from a lot of people, to place at the end of 2006, $100,000 back into the ACB Reserve Fund. Our balanced budget for 2007 also has in it a line item to replace an additional $25,000 into reserves, and I'm sure we can do that. Our new controller, Lane Waters, has worked a lot of miracles for ACB, and I really believe that unless something goes drastically wrong, we will begin to see during 2007 an increase in the number of stores in the ACB enterprises and services.
Yes,
and you're going to see a great increase in revenue based on these new stores. With new stores, with what will almost certainly be new revenue, ACB's future can only be a bright future. ACB will continue to increase its role as the leading advocacy organization of the blind in this nation. We will continue emerging as the most important world leader in organizations of the blind. Based on behind-the-scenes work throughout our community, I foresee ACB taking a far stronger and more proactive role in the field of technology and of advocacy for better technology. Since the creation of ACB, at which time we took the majority of organized blind members throughout this nation into our ranks. This organization has been the leader in advocacy for the blind, and our work in the past 10 years has proven over and over again that we maintain that position and are increasing this work all the time. We heard about Section 255 tonight, and we know that it must be strengthened. Partly, this can certainly be done through the ATBCB. Partly, it must be done through advocacy. We all know that Section 508 has not provided the level of assistance to the blind which we had hoped. We all know that in many areas, the Americans with Disability Act has provided more support for other disabilities than it has for the blind. As an example of this, let me bring Title III to your attention. You know, Title III is primarily combined today to brick-and-mortar concerns. Can I get into a store? A store must be accessible to entry by people with disabilities with a ramp or a proper elevator, something like that. I say to you here this evening that products sold by stores need to carry with them some degree of accessibility to the blind, and stores need to be accountable for that accessibility. When I go into an Apple store, I need to be able to purchase a truly accessible computer. I need to be able to use the iPhone sold by Apple at this store. This is their responsibility. If I go into a Sprint store, I don't want a phone that gives me the first layer of menus and nothing more, because that layer isn't enough. Ladies and gentlemen, working together, we can and will continue to make progress in these areas. With your help and through your work, ACB will continue to grow. We will continue to help make your voice heard around the nation and around the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you
now,
very
Mitch,
much, President Gray.
I can take some questions, but I know your agenda is getting out of whack here.
Yeah, we're a little behind. If we have two very quick, concise questions, we will take those. And then I will suggest how to handle the next program item, which is legislation. Do we have a couple of questions for Chris? Can you get to a mic? While someone's getting the mic, I think we had, Chris was talking about the group that went to Hawaii. I think we had about 10 of us from California. So we had a good representation. All right, who seeks the mic? And it rained there, yes. Who seeks the mic?
Larry Freeman.
Larry?
Yes. Is that radio going to be digital? And have any estimates been set forth as to the cost of it?
The estimated cost at this time is $300, and it is it's a radio that attaches to the internet. So it's not like the new HD radios, for example, and digital in that sense. It is digital in that it attaches to the internet.
Thank you.
You know, Chris, I remember I was elected to ACB's executive committee my second year on the board, and it was probably your first year as president, and we had a lot of discussion about the that internet radio. I think it was a different manufacturer, but it's almost like the boy who cries wolf. Are you really sure?
I'm pretty darn sure.
Oh, good. Any other questions?
Which isn't quite like really, but close.
All right, Chris, you're going to get off. You're going to get off easily. Thank you very much, President Chris Gray. All right. Next on the program is to be a discussion of legislation. Now, your agenda will say it's an update on federal legislation with Frank Welty. And there is a 35-minute time slot allocated. Now, I know Frank can be a man of few words, and what I want to suggest is that we also include, it was an oversight, a report on state legislation from our Director of Advocacy, Dan Kaiser. So what I would propose is that perhaps in 35 minutes, both Dan and Frank make their reports. And Dan, I will ask you as well to consider brevity. So why don't we begin with a report on state legislation? Those of you who attend the Governmental Affairs Committee meeting tomorrow afternoon at 4:15, we can go into some of the bills that I'm sure Dan's going to cover tonight in a little more detail. So I'll turn it over to Dan Kaiser and Frank Welty regarding legislation. Dan, take it away.
Thank you. And all I can say is it's been like I won't say hurricane or earthquake, but it's been like a tornado since I've talked to you, because I ended up having to, my wife and I ended up having to sell our house in across the river from here in the wrong side of the river, West Sacramento, sorry. And it was a different story last year, right, Jeff? And because a lot of communities are experiencing a bus to hub transit system, and they decided to ace our community out of the shuttle bus. I guess I should never argue with the mayor. Anyway, that's what happened, so we had to move. But the good thing and the silver lining is that we moved three blocks from the state capitol. And so I don't know why that seems like a good fit, but it is. And it's really great. I mean, Sacramento, I will just take this time to say, downtown Sacramento and many parts of Sacramento are really striving to build a walkable community. Sacramento City and County have sponsored several pedestrian safety seminars. So I'm blessed to live in this town that the mayor and the city council and the board of supervisors all support walkable communities, livable communities. And that's why we're members of organizations like Walk Sacramento, Walk California, because they know that blind people need to live in walkable and livable communities. Anyway, let me get to the nuts and bolts of our presentation today. We have a very ambitious agenda this year, several resolutions that I've been successful in getting legislation backed, and only last week we had a legislator give us a bill number. So let me go through this. This is the second attempt that CCB has, and now as soon as I say that, I'm going to be wrong because somebody's going to say no, it was three, but I think it was two, that we've been trying to get in-home support services for reader services added to the in-home support services program. And we've had and then this is AB 238 by San Jose Assemblyman Jim Beal.
Bell,
thank you very much. And I'm reading it, and I know the pronunciation, but I'm reading it, and my mind's doing another thing. Anyway, so that bill is passed its first committee and now goes past Human Services with only one curmudgeonly no vote, and everybody else voted yes, and that goes now on to the Fiscal Committee of the Assembly, where that will be heard no date has been scheduled. We've been fighting for the rights of vendors to have a decent wage and decent opportunity in the program. One of the things we had to do was introduce a bill several years ago in 2001 by Nell Soto, who then was a senator, SB 87. There was a lot of problems in the the bill was never implemented because of what you will find out. This bill would create a revolving loan account so that at-risk vendors within the business enterprise, existing vendors within the business enterprise program, would have a chance to get a loan, a no-interest loan. The problem is the bill did not have a mechanism for guaranteeing the loan, and it didn't have a mechanism for the department to contract with the private lending entity, and it did not have a mechanism for dealing with getting the assets of a vendor that defaults on a loan. So we're fixing these problems with the bill, and we have very exciting things going on. You know, I think that we have, thanks to Artis Bazin and Dave Hanlon and other members of this organization, we have a very strong vendors association here. Let's give a big hand to the Randolph Vendors of California. They are proving to be a very, very strong organization. We were very impressed and pleased to see such a vibrant, strong group. A lot of them paid their own way to assist ACB in what Christopher Gray is doing at the nation's capital, and they paid out of their own money, out of their own pocket. So, next, one of the things that our members brought to our attention. And one member that many of you know, Margie Donovan, has been advocating for accessibility for veterans in our state veterans homes, residents, the blind and visually impaired, members within the veterans homes. They're not necessarily members, but they need accessibility. And the problems are so amazing. For example, blind and visually impaired residents of the California veteran homes, they're not part of the federal government, it's a state agency, by the way. And there's going to be five veterans homes in California. What we found is that they're leaving these people to fend for themselves on the self-serve island. No one's there to help them. They have no access to newspapers, to the internal newspaper, to transportation notices when the next shuttle is going to take them somewhere. And so we have a bill through Pat Wiggins in District 1. And by the way, she's profoundly deaf, if anybody didn't know that Senator Wiggins was deaf. She is. They have to have a special system in the legislature for her to hear what's going on. And that's a great accommodation. But that's a little side issue, side story. But at any rate, SB 560 by Pat Wiggins would call for a study by the Legislative Analyst's Office on the accessibility of all the veterans' homes in California on accessibility to the blind and visually impaired. Now, the interesting thing about that, and I'll talk a little bit about it tomorrow at 4 o'clock on the Governmental Affairs Committee, is I just found out that I've been invited to speak at a special hearing after this bill is being heard, because they're talking about building new homes. And the architect that had caused so much problems on the design of the Yountville facility on the latest retrofit apparently is in charge of building the new ones. So, not only am I going to bring up the Title 24 issues that we know to be a problem there, they're not really conforming to existing Title 24 accessibility standards, but they're not apparently complying to programmatical issues that enhance the lives of blind and visually impaired people. So that's something that I'm going to bring up in my testimony. Chris Gray mentioned accessible currency. I wish I had more currency. Oh, they didn't mean that. Okay.
Yeah.
AJR 17 by Ted Liu, who's the chair of the Banking and Finance Committee. AJR, by the way, stands for Assembly Joint Resolution, calls upon the entire legislature to send a statement to the U.S. Department of the Treasury and the President of the United States to support accessible currency. Okay, this bill is scheduled to be heard in the Assembly Banking and Finance Committee on April 30th. Let's see. Okay, now the latest goodie that fell into my hands was there was a bill by Paul Koretz of West Hollywood last year. I can't remember the bill number, but it was going to give the same access rights to pets, basically to comfort animals and emotional support animals. I don't know what those are. I guess somebody could tell me later. Anyway, as service dogs, signal dogs, and guide dogs. And Republican Senator George Runner's office, we went, and he was on one of the committees, and it was me and my wife Ann went in there, and by the time we were done, we had a very angry senator who said, this is, you know, murking the waters, you know, what can we do? He doesn't, you know. So what we found, though, he came back to us and he wanted to change. He got so riled. He wanted a bill to have the California Council of the Blind reform the ADA. I said, well, you know, I'd like to do it, and, you know, we'll have Mitch Pomerantz do that.
Oh, no. No, thanks.
No, we would really like to do that, but, you know, in the legislature and in this day and age, things work in small increments. So let's take this piece that I just found in Section 54.1 of the Civil Code that suddenly I looked in the code. I hadn't seen the code in about a year and a half. I looked in there, and I saw something called a rescue dog and something called a minimal protection dog. And I was like, well, what is that? And so when I started digging into it, I discovered that that these dogs are the problem where a lot of blind people these protection dogs are interfering with the travel, and we found that out in a bill that was passed a couple of years ago. So they're going to strike that language if we can get this passed. They're going to take that out, vote that. The rescue dogs are not what you would think as a search and rescue dog. We still have to find out what they mean in the code. So anyway, we're going to strike those terms. We didn't talk to the membership about this, so we do have a resolution that's winding its way through the resolutions committee. And, you know, we got to be legal and proper and dot all the T's and whatever. So
cross the I's.
That's, yes, cross the I's. And, yeah, we do that really good here. Anyway, okay.
So
other bills of interest. Other bills of interest too. That's right. SB 441, Torlakson, is that BEP is the vending machine nutritious bill that keeps coming up that the blind vendors and CCB keep opposing. Mr. Tom Torlakson is a very stubborn senator, but you know, he believes in what he does. But it passed. Again, this is the fourth year this bill has come up. It's passed the health committee almost unanimous. Well, no, it was like 6-8 or something like that. 6-7, 6-5. Anyway, we're working with them to remove that language because we really feel it affects the livelihoods of blind vendors in an already closed environment where the customers can go anywhere, but the vendors' businesses are stuck in a closed building. So we're with them, and we're going to oppose it. National Federation of the Blind has a very good bill that we're supporting this year. SB 168 by Jeff Denham utilizes an educational task force similar to other educational task forces that we've been hearing about over the last few years, Braille standards, math standards. This year they're going to come up with physical education standards for pupils K through 12. It's too often that blind children are left on the sidelines at playgrounds, not being involved in physical activity. So it's a high time, and I think it's a good bill, and so does CCB. We're in support of that bill. It'll be heard in the Senate Appropriations Committee on April 16th when I get back home. AB 18 is a very interesting bill. It legalizes signature stamp use by people with disabilities. And I think that it's an excellent bill. I don't know about its reality of passing, although it did pass its first committee. And it almost amends every code in the government code. I mean, literally, there's elections code, there's health and welfare codes, everything is in there. We're supporting that bill. Can I take questions afterwards, please?
What was it?
That was just a quick comment.
Oh, I didn't hear what you said. Oh, yes. SB 426 by Christine Keogh sort of continues our emergency preparedness legislation of last year. This is a bill sponsored by the Foundation for Independent Living. This bill would put a deputy director position within the State Office of Emergency Services to oversee ADA issues. And and related to SB 451, today I heard from the staffer of that bill, we during the convention found out that the committee that was reviewing, or the regulatory body that's implementing SB 1451 didn't want to put any money into it. They were going to cut all the funding for that money, and I hadn't had a chance to tell anybody in CCB yet, and I found out today that that was rescinded and they're putting the money in.
Oh, good. Okay.
AB 23 by Fiona Ma of San Francisco requires accessible pedestrian signals be installed wherever countdown signals are installed on state highways. CCB is in support of the bill, obviously. In fact, we got the language put in regarding accessible pedestrian signals. That wasn't in the bill.
Oh, yeah. It's Ma. Yo-yo Ma.
SB 483 by Sheila Kuhl places a resource limit on home equity in terms of Medi-Cal eligibility, and this conforms with federal standards, and the equity level is $750,000. And there's an exemption for spouses and children that live in the home. AB 55, Mervyn Dimely, creates a Medi-Cal poverty level earnings of up to 133%, so basically increases it from 100% to 33% more. It's going to be heard it's in assembly suspense, which means it's stuck for fiscal review. They got to go back and really decide whether they want to do that. AB 1113 by Brownlee invokes the 250% Working Disabled Act, allowing people with disabilities to earn up to 250% of the poverty level to maintain and maintain their Medi-Cal benefits. We are in support. It's being heard in the Assembly Health Committee on April 17th. One of the things that CCB has been heavily, that I've been heavily involved in, and CCB has, is, where did it go? Let me find it here. Hold on. Okay, is this. It's a talking prescription bottle, and here is a demonstration.
Audio label demonstration. Prescription number 48769.
Can't hear it.
Could you all hear that?
No.
Closer to the mic,
Dan. Let me see if I can take the lid off and put the...
We heard that, Dan.
Okay. I'm sorry. I know, but that's what I did first.
Audio label demonstration. Prescription number 48769. Pain reliever 100 milligrams. Take 1 to 2 capsules every 4 to 6 hours as needed for pain. Take with food or milk. There are no more refills available.
It's the microphone's not picking it up very well. But you know, it was funny because when I bought this bottle up, one of the volunteers thought I bought me a glass of water. Anyway. Okay. So we've been working really heavily on this issue. We started working with Ellen Corbett on this issue on SB 472, and we're trying to get and they didn't want to go that far to mandate Medi-Cal or HMOs carry these, like Kaiser's doing voluntarily.
Yes, they are.
Like they're doing voluntarily. But we did get them to work on large print, to at least do large print labeling. And they're talking about 14 font, and I'm like amazed because these bottles are so small, but they, you know, to get 14 font.
29.
And anyway, there's another bill by the NFBC, and I really am not going to comment much on it because we're still researching. AB 1399 by Laura Richardson, prescription audio labeling, Let me read it here. Turn the page here. The bill requires, upon request of a blind or visually impaired customer, that the pharmacist must provide a drug label readable by an assistive technology device for the blind or visually impaired. We are working with the author to tune the language so that the consumers will not have to purchase this assistive technology device. We will be in discussions on this issue more, and we'll talk about it in pretty good detail tomorrow at the Governmental Affairs Committee at 4 o'clock. Finally, I have a lot more to talk about, but I want to introduce Frank Welty, but how I'm going to introduce it is basically talk about our successes in CCB at the Capitol. Did you want me to do that part, Frank, or do you want to do that?
Please do, Dan, yes.
Okay. We made great strides in Washington, D.C. by establishing a coalition of California congressional representatives basically to urge the U.S. Treasury to adopt accessible currency. We are in talks with Congressman Fortney Pete Stark, and Pete Stark's staff told us he's very interested in doing a bill to require this, and we will be so we just followed up on his office and sent him some follow-up letters last week, and so we feel really good about that. We also, the delegation of three that we met with were Mike
Thompson.
Thompson, thank you. Mike Thompson, Pete Stark, and Sacramento's own Doris Matsui. And all three of them also agreed to, whenever a Telecommunication Act comes along, to require that technologies like digital radio, the HDTV, and websites be have accessibility standards written into that bill, and they've all agreed that we're right on that one. And it is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Frank Welty.
I want to thank you once again, ladies and gentlemen, in the California Council of the Blind, for assisting members of this council to participate in ACB's annual Washington seminar, where a group of Californians representing you went to the Capitol and visited the offices of nearly all of your 53 congresspeople and two senators in your behalf. That was a massive effort,
yeah.
And I want to commend my fellow participants, those of you who are supported by the CCB, Jane Cardis from Northern California, Dan Kaiser, Sam Chen from the San Jose area, and myself, and from Southern California, Artis Bazin, and Lourdes Martinez, Vince Calderon, and Bonnie Rennie, who was accompanied by her husband, Bob. In addition, we had great support from the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, who sent Dave Hanlon with his wife, Gina, and Roy Harmon with his wife. They were very helpful, as well as Jesse Lorenz from Berkeley. We had a great team. We accomplished a lot. Again, we had a lot of ground to cover. For some of you who think that we don't need eight people in the Capitol, you need to realize that unlike visiting the state capitol where you have one building to deal with, when you go to the Senate and the House of Representatives in California, you have four buildings to deal with. And
we have
more than 10% of the entire congressional delegation represents California. And that's what we have to cover from this council. It's a big job, and we appreciate your support, and we hope you'll continue. I have details about the issues that we covered in the article that I posted in the Blind Californian, so I referred you to that in the interest of time. Also, others have already discussed the main points that we covered in the specific legislation. I do want to conclude, though, with a story and an important point. I recently moved away from San Mateo County, where I've lived for 12 years. But while I was there, living in San Carlos, I had the privilege one morning of going to a town hall meeting that was held by my assemblyman, who happened to be a fellow by the name of Ira Ruskin.
Yeah.
Well, it just so happens that I met Mr. Ruskin there, and it was a rather cool Sunday morning. And it turned out that, much to my surprise and pleasure, back in the 1970s, when Mr. Ruskin was a college student, he did an internship where he helped this organization called the California Council of the Blind make a video. And so, much to my pleasure, I discovered that we have ourselves a friend in the legislature. Now, the reason I bring up that story is that it applies to something that we saw Dan talk about just now. When he talks about this coalition of the three congresspeople that are really taking up the ball of our issue in the case of telecommunications accessibility and currency accessibility, those three congressmen or congresspeople are people with whom CCB members have built a prior relationship. In other words, these weren't people that we just showed up on their doorstep one morning in the Capitol Hill. These were people that we had already built relationships with. And that is the key. It's important for us to send our representatives to Washington every year. We belong at the Washington Seminar to inform Congress about our issues. But that's only the beginning. Look around you here. Think about it. This room represents the cream of the crop of CCB. That may sound a little scary to some of you. You may think, what? Me? The cream of the crop of CCB? I don't think so. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt, okay? Yeah. Anyway, but the fact of the matter is, we are. You are the people who cared enough to get on a bus, to get on a plane, get a hotel room, hang out here for 3 years with 3 days with these.
Seems like three
feels
years.
Like 3 years.
with folks like me, and learn about the issues. And you are equipped, believe it or not, to go back and share the information you learned here with your congressional representatives and your state legislators. It's not as complicated as you think. Most of these people have town hall meetings when their legislatures are out of session. You can attend those. You can call their local offices and make appointments to talk to them about our issues. If you have the same political views as they do, you can help work on their campaigns. Most of them will be campaigning for office next year, and they always need warm bodies on their campaigns. And the point is that the key to moving our legislative agenda forward is for each of you back in your chapters to make a point of actually connecting at a personal level with your local legislator. That way, when an issue comes up, it's not just one guy with a guide dog traipsing around Sacramento's Capitol, or even eight people hitting the Capitol building in Washington one day a year. It becomes, my friend Bob, who's concerned about this issue, called my office and told me about it. Or my friend Jane, who comes to my barbecues every summer, called me about this office. And so I'm going to meet with their people to talk about voting rights and things like that. In other words, you are the key to the long-term success of the blind community in moving our needs forward. And each of you can do it. And I close here just encouraging you to do that. Again, thank you for your support of our efforts, and please continue that support by being involved personally when you go back home after this convention. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Frank Welty and Dan Kaiser.
I would be remiss, and I really would fear Artis Bazin if I don't do this, because she'll be after me the rest of the convention. I had a page drop off of my report about the election piece.
Okay.
Can I get it? It's
yes.
Not going to take that long. California has a new Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, from the elections, and she did a top-to-bottom study of everything. And what the top-to-bottom report came out with was that basically all voting machines are going to be decertified. Partly, you know, we said that the VPAT machines, the verifiable paper audit trail machines, were not accessible because the printer didn't have an independent speech. However, we are in discussions with the Secretary of State to say that if you're going to decertify these, we need accessible voting and to do a phase-out certification while other machines are being fixed and coming back properly. So we're working on that issue, and it's something to watch for. And you're starting to see all-mail voting bills again. We have SB 1654, and we're going to be on that. That's an all-mail voting bill. And artists, can you tell me who that legislator is? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sure that's M-A-I-L, Roger.
Yes, I knew Roger.
Women got the right to vote 100 years ago or thereabouts.
That was a good answer, Mitch. And anyway, so we need to really watch out for our voting rights here with this new Secretary of State, and not get thrown out with the baby water or the ballots or whatever. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Question.
All right, we have one question from I think Beryl Brown.
Right. Dan, is there a bill number for this incandescent light?
Oh, let me talk about that, because I did talk to Lloyd Levine's people and the other guy. There's another bill. Both have clauses about medical lighting. And I don't know if we can jump to the conclusion that it's going to make accessible lighting more expensive, because you don't get the proper accessible lighting in a grocery store. All they're targeting in these bills is common grocery store lights that are on sale. You know, that you buy in Safeway or whatever. Rite Aid or whatever. You go to conventions and weather places to get accessible lighting, don't you?
Not
I don't know. I'm
no.
Totally blind. I have no idea.
I'm sure that tomorrow you'll be more than happy to shed additional light on this subject at the Governmental Affairs Committee meeting.
Bada bing.
It is getting late. And so our final item of the evening is a report from the president of the California Council of the Blind, Jeff Tom.
Okay, thank you. I have to start out on a couple of light notes, and first I want to
notes.
Yes. Light notes. That was bad. Well, I lost that crowd quickly. I want to thank Chris also for the help that he gave in the legislative seminar in D.C., and that leads into my little story. Chris and I and Jesse Lorenz went to see a representative from Speaker Pelosi's office. And now Chris, for a couple months, had been trying to get them to give us a room where all the ACB people could meet and hand things out and get lunches and all that. And he was unsuccessful because they wouldn't get back to him, and it was just a very frustrating thing for him. And he was pretty angry, shall we say. Well, they finally got a room through some other means. But we walked into this room to meet with this gentleman, and there were these rows of chairs. There were like 50 chairs in this room. And we're trying to figure out where to sit. How do we face this guy? It was just a weird, you know, it was the most strange experience I ever had. And the guy says, well, you know, this is where you asked for a room for 40. Here, this is our room. So he had gotten the muster room, see, but no one had ever bothered to tell anybody. So here we have this meeting with the four of us in this room for 40 people. So that's the political system at its best, shall we say. Okay, a couple of other little notes. I want to acknowledge that Chris brought to mind anniversaries. You know, We have a couple of things coming up, and you already are aware, last convention, Peter and Alice will be tying the knot in May, as you all remember. And, of course, our credentials chair there, Frank Welty and Vita Zavali, will be doing the same in August, so let's hear it for them. I know. And also, the other sort of anniversary of the sport, in a couple of years, the next president of this organization will be able to preside at our 75th anniversary. And interestingly enough, and I hate to even point this out because, Kathy, I know that what memories this will even bring back, but Fresno is bidding on the 75th anniversary. And they are the, along with many other places, of course, I'm sure, but they are the birthplace of the organization. So we'll have to see. I'm not, you know, obviously the board will have to give a lot of thought to hotels with strange ramps. But,
yeah. How will Kathy vote?
Anyway, let's give ourselves one more hand for all the advocacy work that this organization does. Let's hear it for all of us. We couldn't achieve what we do without leaders like Kathy Skivers and Chris Gray and Governmental Affairs Director Dan Kaiser. And, of course, we certainly couldn't achieve it without the gentleman who's going to be the next president of the American Council of the Blind, Mitch Pomerantz. However, for all that these folks do, it wouldn't get done without each and every one of you. Because without you, our legislators wouldn't take any notice of Dan's efforts. It's your letters, your emails, your phone calls that get the job done. And so I want to thank you for all that you do for this organization. I want to discuss two issues this evening, interrelated to some degree. First, I would like to discuss our physical situation and then our upcoming office relocation to Sacramento. I will certainly leave as much time for questions as is possible, but given the late hour, I'm not sure how much that's going to be. With respect to fiscal matters, let me mention the good news first. Because of a strong stock market in 2006 and through staff's ongoing efforts to minimize costs, we realized a small profit for the year. Coupled with the fact that the reserves that we can use for general operating purposes are approximately $700,000, we are in a good position to withstand a difficult year. But now for the sobering reality, and it's one that I, your treasurer Chris Gray, and every member of the board of directors are keenly aware of. It is possible that we will incur a deficit this year. It could be anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000, depending upon many, many factors. Most of all, what kind of revenue we're able to produce. Although we have a few one-time expenditures for the year, such as audits that are needed to catch up from prior years and some relocation costs that I will discuss later, the primary issue is revenue. Although it isn't the only issue, the primary culprit is, of course, the fact that the vehicle donation program, which once provided $200,000 in a year, may provide anywhere between $25,000 and $75,000 this year. But there is a question: is there anything that we can do about enhancing our vehicle donation revenues? And the answer to that is possibly. The program provides signs that can be posted at businesses, including car dealerships, for which they have a special incentive program. And with the signs and the brochures, we can certainly advertise not only our own donation program, but also our organization itself. We can get these signs out to local chapters, and we'd be thrilled for your work in getting them out into the community. It would certainly pay off dividends to do so. But as a practical matter, many of us lack the resources to disseminate these signs out into the general community. And we realize that it is not likely to provide us with a great expansion of revenue. However, to the degree that there are chapters willing to do so, we are certainly willing to get those things to you, and that's certainly a project that would help us tremendously. Of course, there is the monetary monthly support program for which you may sign up here at the convention. Maryland has forms of registration. This program is operated by ACB, but as was mentioned at the board meeting last night, you can designate part of your donation to CCB up to 50%. And for those who have the wherewithal to do it, even as a very small donation, certainly that's an excellent program. Life membership is also another option. And I think at the fall convention, we're going to recognize many of the life members that we currently have. It is only a cost of $200. It can be paid over a five-year period. However, we cannot expect seniors, those who are without employment, and those barely making ends meet on their monthly salary to donate their scant resources to CCB to the degree that it is necessary to provide the revenue that we need. We can't expect to support this organization on the backs of our members. We really need to work on outside sources, and you can be of invaluable assistance in this endeavor as well. Give us your fundraising ideas, as well as your community contacts that can be used in our fundraising efforts. Your chapters can also consider doing a local fundraiser to benefit the state organization, and hopefully one that will take advantage of funding from sources other than your own members. Let me take this opportunity to salute the work of our fundraising chair, Rhonda King. She has been working incredibly hard, and she's upset that she hasn't been able to work harder. But I know that as soon as she's back to full strength, she is going to give every drop of blood that she can just about for this organization, because that's what she always has done. And I want to salute the effort that she's put in. She's a real hero to this organization. Okay. Before turning to the office relocation, let me just conclude by saying that we can and we will turn our physical situation around. You know, there are times when I come back from a 12-hour day with the legislature, and maybe I've worked a weekend, and I'm thinking, you know, I just can't give any more to this organization. And for a few days, maybe I don't. Well, we don't have the ability to take that attitude anymore. We really have to really do our best to turn the situation around. And we can do it if we all put our minds to it. It won't happen overnight, as it almost seemed to do with the huge revenue influx we had with the vehicle donation program. But with our shared wisdom, elbow grease, and commitment, there is no reason we can't achieve excellent results in the years to come. Let me now turn to a discussion of the pending fiscal relocation to Sacramento. I would like to provide you with some history, a little discussion of the present, and thoughts on the future, with a view not only to addressing some of the concerns that members have expressed, but also to give you an idea of the extraordinary potential that your board's action could have for CCV. I can't even remember when people first began talking about the desirability of moving the office to Sacramento. It was very probably was back maybe when Mitch was president. It's been a long, long time since those discussions began to occur. We've been in Hayward now for almost a decade. When the office was moved there during Kathy's presidency from Burbank, the move was made for a variety of excellent reasons, none better than the fact that it saved money for the organization to do so in a situation where, you know, it would have been very difficult to have continued in Burbank. About a year after I became president, the Hayward lease was up. I didn't feel that the board had sufficient time to do the research on the advisability of a move to Sacramento, so we signed a three-year extension in 2004 of the Hayward lease. In 2005, a committee was established composed of members who have a variety of different views on relocation to look at the issue once there was information to present. We used a realtor at no cost to CCB, and after looking at some locations that either weren't in our cost range or didn't meet our needs, we focused on presenting to the committee a few locations, and principally the location that was finally selected by the board at 15th and J Streets, which is within walking distance of the Capitol, approximately six blocks away. The committee and then the board voted to recommend that we make a proposal to the owner. A counter proposal was made by the owner, and then after negotiations with both Hayward and the Hayward owners, our current landlords, and the property owners in Sacramento, the board voted to accept the relocation to Sacramento after very thorough and complete, I think, discussion. Let me discuss three points about the move, why the decision was one that the board handled, the cost impact, and the benefits to CCB of the relocation. As to the board handling, there's a variety of reasons, and I don't think the simple ones are really the issue. Notwithstanding the fact that, of course, there's the legal authority to do it in the Constitution, but that's not really what's important. What's most important is the fact that in these sort of difficult matters, which clearly involve a lot of factual-based considerations and negotiations, and in matters that clearly have always been handled by the board of directors, it was a decision that really was much preferable for a board to make as opposed to a general membership decision. Certainly board members were provided every bit of information that we could possibly provide so that we would make the most advisable decision possible. Okay, let me... there you go. We like that. With respect to costs, setting aside for a minute the one-time moving costs, which should amount to approximately $11,000, the ongoing costs for the two locations will provide significant savings in the first few years and then will be a little bit more costly around the fourth or fifth year in Sacramento. But over the period of 5 years, well, actually, it's sort of difficult to predict because we would have a new lease. We would have had to have another lease in Hayward after 3 years. But from a cost estimate, it's probably going to be fairly close to the same in over a five-year period. I can tell you one thing. If we didn't move now, it will be a much more costly proposition to attempt down the road. So why are we relocating? The reasons are many, but the primary one is just about who we are. The California Council of the Blind is at its core an advocacy organization. We need to be in the state capitol. Everyone from the teachers, the grape growers, the telecommunications companies, and the chiropractors, and of course the independent living centers, the building officials, etc., all have offices in Sacramento. We are lucky to have a governmental affairs director who is willing to work out of a home environment. But we can't expect such good fortune forever. Even more importantly, if we want to hold meetings with interest groups, public officials, or others, we need to have a place to hold those meetings, and we can do so in Sacramento. We also have a chance to greatly enhance our visibility throughout the state, through our central office, with our central office in Sacramento, something we were unable really to do with the office in its current location. We can potentially take advantage of that to network for public relations and fundraising if we use it in the right manner. Are there some drawbacks? You bet. And none more than the fact that we sadly will not have the services of Marilyn Kohler. There's no question that it won't be the same when we call in and don't get that warm, helpful presence that Marilyn provides. Let's hear it for Marilyn. Some would say that given the cost of moving during this deficit year, it's not a time to take a risk. I would reply that given our reserves and the incredible upsides of having a permanent home in Sacramento, that it's a risk we cannot afford not to take. Let me mention one more item before I close that the board decided on last night, and this is not because we are moving to Sacramento so much as it is dealing with our deficit situation. When we move the position that Marilyn currently holds, we will fill on only a part-time basis for three-fifths time with full benefits. It will be, we hope and expect that that will be a very temporary thing, assuming that we get our revenues up into a situation that we need them to be, so that because we need to have a full-time person, and that's what we are shooting for. So this will be temporary. I don't think it will cause noticeable reductions in the services that you get as members, and we'll certainly do whatever it takes to make sure that doesn't happen. But nonetheless, there are many things we can use full staff for, and so hopefully this will be a very temporary thing. In closing, 2 years from now, someone else will be giving this report. I am absolutely convinced that he or she will be able to say that the decision by your board of directors to place our office in Sacramento led down a path toward a brighter future for the California Council of the Blind. Thank you very much. Okay, Mitch, is there time for questions?
It is now just shortly after 9:30. We have a couple of important committee meetings to follow, but I think we can take a couple of quick questions or comments. Get to a microphone against center aisle and come forward. If anyone wishes to ask President Tom a question. I'm sorry, Ed? All right, we have no questions. Look, I've worked with Jeff now for several years, and I want to tell you that Jeff has worked very diligently as our president. He has done an outstanding job. He has operated openly, professionally, and I don't think we have a better representative as president of the California Council of the Blind than we have in Jeff Tom, and I want to thank Jeff.
Thank you, and thank all of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the second general session is concluded. The convention stands in recess until 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. Have a good evening.